Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Builder of Blade's Rest, a low-stakes town-building lit RPG by Tom Watts, narrated by Ryan Burke. Chapter 1. It was the night of Hugo the beer brewer's birthday, but I was late for the party. Instead of drinking gnome-made beer with everyone else, I was inside a hot bakery, sweating my ass off and covered in a strange mixture of grease and jam. As if to tempt me, the party sound drifted through the open windows. Cheers for Hugo as the cake was unveiled, gnomic laughter from his many visiting relatives, the songs from the Blade's Rest band belted out drunkenly on lutes and fiddles. Me? Well, I'd promised Ira Wright that I would fix her oven. The resident baker had come to me with a peculiar problem, since I was the village builder, crafter, and general handyman. Normally, a simple oven repair job would be enough to make me put a party on hold, but Ira's strange set of circumstances had really snagged my crafter's instincts. I'll do it right now, I told her. But Hugo's party is tonight. It's his 100th, said Ira. You don't need to do it this minute. He's 100 years old? I said, disbelieving. This isn't so very old for a gnome. Anyway, worry about my oven tomorrow. I have a backup. It's just that I get so many orders these days that I end up running both at once. I need a backup for my backup. Ira, I said, in a show of crafting bravado, I'll have this oven ready before I go to the party. I promise. And so the fates listened to my oath and decided that it was time for them to get involved in mortal affairs. I say fates, but really it was nothing so mystical as that. Instead, the game's artificial intelligence had taken, what was the opposite of pity? Whatever it was, it had taken it on me, and a simple broken oven, a job that should have taken me minutes using my tinkering skill, still wasn't resolved. The issue wasn't the normal kind that might plague a bakery oven. It wasn't blocked heating valves nor malfunctioning thermostats. There was no sign of normal wear and tear. This oven had way worse problems than that. Rolling up my sleeves, I equipped my tinkerer's gloves and tools. Then, accessing my tinkering skill menu, I selected the repair option, and then focused on the oven until semi-transparent game text hovered teasingly near my ear. Item: baking oven. Chance of repair: 15%. Oh, man. 15% was low for something like this. An oven? I should have been able to fix it, no sweat. After all, I was ranked as skilled as a tinkerer. That meant I'd already passed through the apprentice and novice levels, which wasn't bad for a skill I didn't use much. I could repair hot air balloons, fix quite complex gear systems, yet I only had a 15% chance of repairing the oven. Rather than put me off, it only made me more determined. I selected my repair skill. 5 tinkerer cogs required. Checking my inventory, I lacked the necessary tinkerer cogs to carry out the repairs. For tinkering, cogs were like currency. They went towards the repair of anything tinkering-related, even if those didn't typically need cogs. Take the oven, for instance. Since when did an oven need cogs? But this was blade and sheath, and nothing came for free. Magic used up mana, swordplay spent your stamina, crafting was the same, and for tinkering in particular, cogs were what you needed to spend. Accessing my tinkering skill again, I used a bunch of copper in my inventory to create some cheap cogs. Most came out at acceptable quality, with a few reaching the dizzying heights of good. Then I tried to repair the oven once more. While I waited, I stared longingly out of the window and across the village of Blade's Rest, where the communal party was in full swing. There was a long picnic table set up with all kinds of food, and everyone was out there having a good time. Five String was playing his lute. Hugo's gnome relatives were having beer-drinking competitions. Even Brip was dancing. Everyone was just hanging out and letting loose. I could just leave the oven until tomorrow, I told myself. After all, I'm only holding myself back here. Nobody else is doing it. Then the prouder part of my brain said, "No! Finish what you started! And then your beers will taste even better for it."
Repair complete.
Eagerly wanting to try out the oven, I fired it up and soon flames were roaring inside of it. Then I put a tray of dough Ira had left for me on the middle shelf and I shut the door. All being well, my repairs were perfect, and the dough would rise to form a loaf of tasty bread. Since this was blade and sheath, there were no annoyances like waiting hours for something to bake. Just minutes later, the oven dinged. Please be bread. Please be bread. I opened the oven. It wasn't bread. Instead, sitting on the middle shelf where I had placed the tray of dough, were 5 baked apples covered in golden syrup. This was the 5th time it had happened now. 5 times the oven had turned dough into apples. Ira had also reported that, when it was in an especially mischievous mood, the oven would turn dough into things such as cheese wheels or rashers of bacon. Cheese? Good. Bacon? Great. But not when you're expecting something sweet. I need a break. Telling myself that a break was just a pause and definitely didn't mean I was quitting, I headed out into Blade's Rest. Our little village looked beautiful under the setting sun. It sat nestled peacefully inside Gobbler's Creek's embrace, picturesque as picturesque could be. Even today, despite being filled by dozens of drunken gnomes who'd traveled for miles to celebrate Hugo's 100th, the gnomes were the loudest bunch I'd ever seen. Singing, drinking beer after beer, starting arm wrestling competitions that turned into actual wrestling competitions. As I got closer, I spotted my buddy Link, who gave me a quick wave before heading over to some of the quieter gnomes who were locked in a very conspiratorial discussion. Knowing Link, he probably wanted to ask them about what herbs grew in gnomish lands so he could forage there. Hey, Josh! Seeing my friend Hilly put a big smile on my face, which grew even bigger when she pulled me into a hug. Some people thought Hilly was stern, maybe even grumpy. Those people just hadn't gotten to know her yet, that was all. Or maybe they'd caught her on a bad day. We all have them, after all. Hilly released me from her bear hug. Still having trouble with the oven? Yeah, well, I shrugged. It's complicated. Really? Just get a new one. It's only an oven. That would be easier, I admitted. See? Problem solved. Have a beer. I looked to my right, where 5 barrels of gnomish beer brewed by Hugo, he insisted on supplying, and being paid for the beer for his own party, waited there temptingly. As I watched, Hercule the tavern owner headed to a barrel marked Birthday Brew and filled his tankard, before raising it in honor of the birthday gnome. Standing there amidst the partiers, my mind swimming through the currents of my thoughts, got snagged on 2 nets. Did I just tell Ira she needed a new oven and then enjoy the party? Or should I carry on trying to fix the problem oven? No sooner had I thought about quitting than I felt resolve fire up inside me like the coals on our blacksmith's forge. Josh, where are you going? Said Hilly. I didn't turn around, my stare set firmly on the bakery. I'll be right back. Save me a beer. Inside the bakery, the offending oven awaited me, its door open in such a way that it almost looked like it was smirking. The problem was that the oven was artificed. Ira had bought it from an elf artificer in Westfell, who was selling a bunch of various artificed stuff at dirt cheap prices. Supposedly he was getting rid of them because his attempts at artificing them had failed. According to him, the oven that Ira bought was a perfectly normal, unartificed oven. So it had been, for a while. The oven had cooked all kinds of sugary, doughy snacks to perfection, but, like a troll waking from a slumber, its artificery had resurfaced, and now it turned almost everything into apples. All right, how am I going to fix this? I said aloud. I wondered if the tinkerer cogs I had made from copper weren't good enough because of the material I had used. So I made some more using iron, which was known as the best material for tinkerer cogs. This time, half my tinkerer cogs came out as good. Rearmed and ready to go, I tried the repair again with my new metal pieces.
Repair complete!
Even with better materials, the same thing happened. 5 baked apples sitting where there should have been fresh bread.
Damn it,
I said, taking an apple out of the oven and biting into it. There was no point wasting them, after all. Right now, I had maybe 30 baked apples that I could donate to Hugo's celebrations. Chomping on my delicious apple, I paced around the bakery and pondered on my failure so far. Was it a skill issue? Maybe I had to level up my tinkering. A rank of skilled wasn't much in the grand scheme of things. Then again, this was just an oven. It really shouldn't have been this hard. Did I need better tools? Was it just a matter of trying again and again until I got it right? Skills in blade and sheath had a percentage success or failure rate after all, with lots of factors taken into account each time you used them. Maybe some kind of unseen stat was working against me. Whatever the reason, right now, I was more determined to fix this damned artificed oven than I had been with anything else in my life. So, after stopping by the party to wish Hugo a happy 100th birthday and give him a gift, I bought him a fancy new thermometer to use with his brews. I fast-traveled out of Blade's Rest and north across Gobbler's Creek to a town called Westfell. Chapter 2 Westfell was about 5 times the size of Blade's Rest, and was often packed full of players, seasoned ones who wanted to sell loot they'd scavenged from dungeons far away, novices who had found themselves spawned in Gobbler's Creek and would leave the first chance they got, and the third kind of players. These were people who just liked spending time in one of the game's many towns, sampling beer in taverns, reading in libraries, that kind of thing. Loot, quests, relaxation. It was said there was something for everyone in Blade and Sheath, and I fully believed it. There was a crafting fair going on in Westfell today, and amidst the bright flags, bobbing balloons, and bustling stalls, the aging and eccentric Master Tinkerer Bert had his little pavilion. It wasn't hard to find. I just had to look for the mechanical metal pigeons spinning in circles atop the tent. The elderly tinkerer, surrounded by a collection of cogs, gears, and multicolored tinkerer parts, looked up from his work. His circular goggles, about as thick as the bottom of a beer bottle, made his eyes appear twice their size.
Ah, Joshua, it's been a while. What brings you to me today? I'm not hiring at the moment, I'm afraid.
Bert looked like someone had stuck an old badger in a jumpsuit, then handed it a spanner. His silver hair was cropped short, as if he'd lost a battle with a farmer's scythe, and he boasted a beard that could have housed an entire family of mice. Bert claimed no tinkering job could confound him, and given his reputation, I believed him. I had once worked for Bert when he had a contract to produce thousands of tinkerer cogs for a factory somewhere northeast of Gobbler's Creek. Along with his apprentices, all of whom were much younger and much better tinkerers than me, I had churned out cog after cog, starting out creating poor-rated ones, but eventually earning Bert's respect.
I have a problem, Bert, I said. Only one? You're lucky then, lad, he said.
He laughed like a rusty hinge, a low, wheezy sound that vibrated right out from his boots.
It's a big one, though, I muttered.
I explained the situation to Bert about the artificed oven and its fruit-inspired disobedience. I left out no detail. Ira's plea for help, my unfulfilled promise, the mystery of the transformed baked goods. Bert listened, scratching at his bushy white brows from time to time, his keen gaze never leaving my face. When I finished, he sat silent for a moment, mulling over the issue. Then he burst out laughing, his small body shaking with mirth.
Ha ha ha! Oh, laddie, you've gone and bought one of those reject elf ovens, haven't you? Here's the thing. Some artificers are patient. That's the top and bottom of it. They try artificing something. Nothing happens, so they throw it out. But artificery's a lot like the bread dough that your stubborn oven won't cook. It sometimes needs time to rise. I once had a pencil that took months to show its artificery. One day I was writing with it, and it flew out of my hand and started writing by itself.
Any ideas how I can fix it? I asked. Is it a tools issue? Do I need to get some better gear? Bert peered at me, his bushy eyebrows knitted together.
Now that's the question, isn't it? You're a skilled ranked tinkerer, Joshua. That ought to be enough. If this was purely a tinkering issue... This requires a bit of unconventional thinking. Tell me, how well-versed are you in artificery?
Well, I knew how to fiddle with simple mechanisms and make tinkerer cogs and gears. Artificery was out of my league, just like tinkering. Artificery was both a skill and a class in itself. A player could learn artificery as an individual skill, or he could amass the various other skills needed to become an artificer in terms of class. And there was a difference. Learning the artificery skill, rather than earning it as a class, was a little like getting the light version of something. The only artificery-related thing I had was an improviser artificer perk, tied to my improvisation crafting skill. It was a very minor perk, barely useful at all. It definitely wouldn't solve my oven problem. I'm not very versed in it at all, I said. I know maybe two of the lines, but not the chorus.
Well, do you want to learn?
Checking my character sheet, I saw that I had a skill slot available, so there was nothing stopping me from getting the skill. But it would take some time, and this was only for an oven after all. I was wasting a lot of energy on it already, and I had work to do when blades rest. Then again, having the artificery skill would come in handy while building our village into a settlement. Artificers could create all kinds of stuff. Enchanted doorbells that told you the name of the person visiting you, self-writing quills that could take dictation, or even magical teapots that ensured your tea was always at the perfect temperature. The cobblestones of Blade's Rest could be enchanted to stay clear of ice in the winter, or the lampposts could glow with a better light when someone approached. If someone was clever enough with artificery, the possibilities were endless.
I guess I better learn artificery, I said. There we go, said Bert. Another satisfied customer.
Customer?
What, lad? Do you think a master tinkerer's advice comes for free?
Not even for a friend, I said.
Bert smiled. All right, for a friend, my advice is free.
Thanks.
But for you, it costs 5 silvers.
Heading back to Blade's Rest, I made a beeline for our village's pint-sized library. For most people, the word library conjured images of sprawling rows of ancient tomes and stern-looking librarians demanding complete silence, or they'd kick you out of there. But our library wasn't like that, not even close. Roughly the same size as a generously proportioned haystack and made from wood, if I was being kind, I'd say that our library had charm. If I was in a not-so-kind mood, I'd ask which rogue farmer had taken their disused barn, transported it across Gobbler's Creek, and then abandoned it in our village before running away under the cover of night. Inside, the library was a hodgepodge of heavy wooden bookshelves made from different types of wood. These were filled to bursting with all manner of books, steamy romances, thrilling fantasy yarns, and even skill books that players could use.
Hey, Cedric!
I called out cheerily as I poked my head around the door. A musty aroma of old parchment greeted me.
Ah, Josh!
The head librarian, Cedric, was hunched over a desk, engrossed in a novel he was writing. He was a tall man, as thin as a bookmark, and he dressed impeccably. In fact, he and Brip were locked in a never-ending competition to see who the best-attired person in the village would be.
Looking for something to read? A romance, perhaps?
He asked. I'm looking for something a bit more pragmatic. A skill book about artificery.
Artificery! Goodness, Josh, you might as well ask for the moon on a stick. It's far too advanced for our little library. Until it's upgraded, we won't stock skill books as advanced as that.
I sighed, my shoulders sagging.
I was afraid you'd say that. I could offer you pottery for beginners instead.
For a brief moment, I saw myself learning pottery. I'd always admired the hobby, but I had a job to do, even if said job, fixing an oven, was spiraling out of control.
Maybe another time, I said.
Feeling like a potato in search of a peeler, I made my way to Brip's bookstore, or as I liked to call it, Brip's Emporium of Incredibly Overpriced Books. Brip, the proprietor, was a satyr with a tendency to serve up sarcasm and disdain in equal measures. He was the only store owner I'd ever met who seemed to actively dislike his customers. Despite his unique customer service skills, however, his stock of books was often pretty good. Upon entering, the bell above the door let out a tinkle that sounded suspiciously like a disgruntled sigh. I wondered if it was an artificed bell.
Ah, the prodigal reader returns,
Brip said, his well-groomed goatee bristling with every syllable. Dressed exquisitely in a crimson velvet waistcoat and silver cravat, he looked more like a lord than the surly manager of a bookstore.
Hey, Brip!
Don't just stand there gawking like a pig who's forgotten where his sty is,
Brip grumbled. grudgingly setting his knitting needles and twine aside. This was a new hobby, and so far he'd only knitted a dozen or so socks of mismatched sizes. What piece of mind-numbing literature do you seek today? That's a rude way to talk to a customer. And mind-numbing literature? Aren't you supposed to love books? Customer? You're not a customer. You're Josh. If you were a real customer, I'd be nicer. Are you sure about that? Well, perhaps a little nicer. What do you want? I explained my situation to Brip, starting with the stubborn oven, and then my newfound necessity for artificery knowledge. Artificery, you say? Brip muttered, rubbing his furry chin. He looked at me with a raised eyebrow, as if deciding whether or not to help. That's not exactly light reading, you know. It's a dangerous craft. That's okay. Well, let me see what I have in the storeroom. After a few moments of searching, he returned with a dusty, worn-looking tome. This should do the trick, he said, handing it to me. The cover was faded, but I could make out the title. Artificery for Beginners, a Simple Guide for a Not-So-Simple Skill. Thanks, Brip, I said, reaching for my pouch of coins. Brip quoted a surprisingly fair price for the tome, and I paid without complaint. Chapter 3. Striding away from Brip's store, my coin pouch a smidgen lighter but feeling weirdly optimistic, I headed to my crafting hut in the center of the village. By now, Hugo's birthday party was long finished, though reminders of it lay strewn around the square. Beer tankards, a pile of clothes, I didn't even want to think who those belonged to, and even the blade and sheath's version of a traffic cone, taking the form of a wooden "No Carts Allowed" sign. It must have been quite a celebration, and it was a shame I'd missed it. Stepping into my crafting hut, I breathed in the smell of a home away from home. Hidden behind its simple exterior was a jumble of old tools, half-finished projects, and a lot of mason jars and paint pots crammed with all kinds of odds and ends, such as dry paintbrushes and oddly assorted nails. My crafting table, bearing marks and scars from countless hours of crafting, stood against one wall. Opening the weathered cover of the artificery skill book, I read the first couple of pages, which described the history of artificery and outlined examples of why it was so useful. The next 200 pages were blank. Books and blade and sheath were mostly for show, with a few exemptions, but on the last page I found what I needed.
Artificery Starter Projects. There are many ways to learn artificery. However, this author humbly suggests that to learn apprentice-level artificery, you should complete one of the following projects repeatedly until you have learned the skill. 1. Ever-burning fireless fire. 2. Self-sweeping broom. 3. Weatherproof tent. 4. Ever-cool pillow. 5. Endless jar.
All of the projects sounded interesting to me, and I could think of lots of uses for them. Heck, I'd have loved to have them in my real-life apartment. Especially the ever-cool pillow. If there's one thing I hate, it's humid summer nights. I had to pick something, however, and there was one thing I'd noticed while spending so much time in Ira's bakery. Her storeroom was chaotically organized and filled with way too many jars and boxes, so I knew exactly which project to choose. Fast traveling back to Westfell, I visited an artificer's shop named Carter's Oddments and Wonderments. Carter, a tall, smiling, dark elf lady, made small talk with me while I browsed her shelves.
Thinking of going away anywhere this summer? She asked.
Before I could answer, she told me in extreme detail about her upcoming trip around the glittering shore. In fairness to her, it sounded very nice. When I was done shopping, I left the store with a set of basic artificer's tools and 5 pouches of generic, poor-quality mana. I didn't like buying such low-standard materials, but Carter had told me,
"If you don't even have the skill yet, my friend, you will not be able to work with mana rated acceptable or above. Sorry."
Not done with my trip to Westfell, I headed to the Wandering Boar Tavern, where I met Hilly and Link for lunch. Hilly had spent the morning chasing down rogue chimeras for a job she'd taken from the Hunter's Guild job board, while Link had been working on his communal garden in Blade's Rest. Hilly ordered a tomato and wild mushroom risotto, while Link kept his lunch light, only choosing a cheese sandwich.
I was a big lover of in-game cuisine, and I unapologetically ordered a 3-course meal that culminated in the best cheesecake I'd ever eaten. We washed our food down with tankards of Gnome's Promise, a brew that Hugo had sold to a Westfell Tavern franchise. "How's the oven thing going?" asked Hilly. "Put it this way, if you ever want a baked apple, Ira's selling them at a discount." I could see that Link was staring at me in a way that I had come to know meant something. His eyebrow was twitching, and he looked like he was about to say something. "What's up, big guy?" I said.
"It's just this oven business. We need to be working toward village level 2, don't we?"
"Yeah, I know. You're right.
But I've already spent so much time on it."
"Sunk cost fallacy," said Hilly.
"Just because you've spent so much time on it doesn't mean it wouldn't be better just to quit. Besides, Link's right. We do need to make some progress. We've slacked off a little since we hit village status, and I know I've been the worst offender for that. Let me take care of the oven, and then I'll work on the village. I promise."
Back in Blade's Rest, I stopped by Git and Nug Red Branch's general store. Their shelves were a little barer than they'd have liked, on account of rising supplier costs.
"If the village was more self-sustaining," Nug told me, "our prices might be cheaper."
"As in we should grow our own stuff?" I said.
"That would be a start."
"Let me think about it. In the meantime, do you have any glass jars?"
"I'm afraid not, but if you like, I can order some."
"I kinda need them now. It's okay, I'll leave it. Thanks anyway," I said. Luckily, I had plenty of jars in my crafting hut. It just meant that I had to pour out my ridiculous collection of random nails, cogs, nuts, and bolts. I left these in a mess on my shelf, vowing to clean them up later. After brewing a pot of coffee, I set up shop on my crafting table. There I arranged the empty jars, poor generic mana, and my basic artificer's tool set in orderly rows. Sipping on my coffee, I made a silent prayer to the gods of in-game crafting, and then got to work. Being in proximity to my crafting table added a new, temporary section to my in-game menu. This looked a lot like my item inventory, except it consisted of several empty square boxes. I placed a jar, some mana, and my artificer tools in 3 of them.
Items: mason jar, poor general mana, artificer tools. Craft item, yes/no?
Selecting yes, I eagerly awaited the results. The sound of delicate tapping and of screws turning filled my hut, and the surface of my crafting table became a whirr of blurred activity. Soon the blurry effect dissipated, and an item awaited me. It was, as I'd expected, a jar. But what kind of jar?
Item: slightly improved jar.
Damn it! All I had done was make the jar a little taller and thickened the glass. No artificery whatsoever had taken place. It was Blade and Sheath's pesky failure rate again. The lower your skill level, the more tries it took to create something. If you didn't have the skill at all, your odds were even lower. Trying again, I got the same result. Soon, I had crafted my way through 6 jars and half of my generic mana. Not to mention my basic artificer tools were already losing their durability. That's what I got for buying cheap, I guessed. The problem was that without having even the apprentice version of artificery, I wouldn't have been able to use higher quality tools. Taking a break, I headed out into the village. Blade's Rest was a lot busier these days, on account of us earning village status. It might not sound like much, being a village, but it was a big deal for a player-created place. People were already talking about us on the many player forums dedicated to Blade and Sheath. Not to mention, one game streamer had streamed the whole week he had spent in our village, ending with a glowing review of how peaceful it was. This morning, Ira Wright already had a queue of people outside her bakery, waiting for her famous honey twists or miner's delights, which was a pastry filled on one side with a savory filling and a sweet filling on the other. Sounded crazy, but it worked. Don't ask me how, but it did. The queue got even larger as I watched, and soon the line of players and NPCs was like a giant wriggling snake. Suddenly, Ira's bakery door opened.
"You'll just have to wait your turn," she said. "I won't rush my bakes just to please you all."
"We want honey twists! We want honey twists!"
chanted a player who was dressed like a peasant in torn drab shirt and trousers. He must have been one of the many players who came to the game purely to sample delicious food, stroll in the scenic wilderness, and generally take some time out from real life. Such players rarely cared what their in-game avatars looked like.
Well, you'll have to wait.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?